Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to Surviving the Days Ahead. I am your host, Reverend Deborah Marshall. Now, before we begin, our guest call-in number is 515-605-9839. That's 515-605-9839. And I'd love to have some of you call in, particularly if you have been abducted and made it back here to tell the story about it, or if you have had lost loved ones or something has happened since the invasion over the summer. So if anybody would like to talk to me about it, I would love for the silence to be broken. Now, my email also, if you want to talk to me in private, my email is revdeb1955@gmail.com, and it's all lowercase letters. Now, today we will begin our exploration of the granddaddy of all disasters, nuclear war. This will be discussed today and Sunday, or longer, depending on how much information I can find. And, you know, I think that there's more on there now than there was. When I did this before, a year or so ago, all I could find were things that came from World War II, you know, Hiroshima and Nagasaki. And there really was very little on the computer otherwise. But I have found some other websites. Now, what I'm going to talk about today is from WikiHow. And then tomorrow I may be dealing with a couple of other websites. One of the first things for any disaster, you need to stock up on non-perishable foods, water, first aid kits, you know, supplies, and try to include burn gel. When we're talking about a war, a nuclear war, we're talking about the possibility of burns. So burn gel dressings, they're not cheap, but having some of those in your kit would be a very wise thing to have. Another thing is buy a dosimeter. You can get a dosimeter at Walmart for around $30 or $40. Not Walmart, I'm sorry, Amazon. And I don't know, Walmart might have it too if you go online. I really don't know. But I know Amazon does have it. And it's a good thing to have in case you need to check and see if there's radiation coming your way, if there was something that happened at the other end of the country or in the middle of the country a few states away, then it would be a good idea to know what's happening. Now, seek shelter indoors. Immediately. Ideally, go to a basement or move to a centrally located room in the house and stay away from windows. Try to stay calm and plan to shelter in place for at least 48 hours. More than likely, it would probably be closer to 10 days. Ration water and food, of course, you have to. And wait for an announcement from your local or federal government to tell you what to do next. One of the ways to do that is to have a good radio that picks up the NOAA, you know, the NOAA settings. They have their channel on the radio going 24/7 with weather reports. And in the case of a disaster like that, I'm sure that they would have all the local information on there. Now, what to do? Make a plan. First, always, for all disasters, you need to have a plan of action so you know what to do when it happens. You must shelter for 48 hours to 10 days, and I would say it's probably going to be closer to 10. Have a good NOAA radio, as I said, and enough canned goods and non-perishable food and water and all essentials like that, and make a plan and review and discuss it with your family. Make sure they are on the same page with you as far as what you're going to do. Also, very important, you have to have a hand crank manual can opener. If you have canned goods, you have to have that hand crank can opener. Now, stock up on non-perishable foods, as we said, white rice, wheat, beans, sugar, honey, oats, pastas, powdered and canned milk, dried fruits and nuts, dried vegetables as well as canned vegetables. Canned is probably better Fruits and nuts dried, you can eat as a snack as they are. You know, you don't have to cook them. But anything that is dry, you're going to have to soak, and you're going to have to use a lot of water to prepare, like dry beans. You're really better off getting them in a can already cooked. Then you don't have to get water and go through that long procedure. So I recommend that if you're sheltering at home, you know, then you can have your canned goods. Build your supply slowly. Every time you go to the store, pick up one or two. Look for sales, you know, and pick up one or two extra cans. Make sure you have a manual can opener, as I said. And also make sure if you're putting them in a separate area of your house, you're not putting them in on your regular pantry shelf, you've got to check your expiration dates. Remember to check expiration dates maybe every week or two. And then anything that's coming close to needing to be eaten, you go ahead and eat that and then put something new on the shelf to replace it. Now, storing water. Consider storing water in plastic food grade containers. Clean containers with a bleach solution, then fill with filtered water. And this is something WikiHow said that I disagree with. They said distilled water. That you don't drink distilled water. That's good for appliances like steam irons. But you don't drink it because it's not good for you. I think it actually helps to leach minerals out of your bone. It does something to you that isn't good. So you want drinking water, not distilled. And they ought to have that up on the shelf. They ought to have some sort of note on the shelf in the stores, because I imagine people figure it's the same thing, but it isn't. Now, aim for at least 1 gallon per person per day of water, and I can promise you, you'll wish you had two or three, because you need it for regular hygiene as well as cooking, as well as drinking and washing anything. So a lot of that water, you really need 2 to 3 gallons a day per person. That's a much better, much more realistic amount. Keep plain regular household bleach on hand to purify water. It's about a half teaspoon per gallon. Or use water purification tablets and follow the directions. With the bleach, I think you put it in and you wait for maybe an hour or so. You know, you let it sit, open up, you know, open to the air for an hour or so, and let the chlorine evaporate out so that you're not drinking the chlorine. Now, get communication supply, radio, as we said, solar power, hand crank, and battery operated. You know, it's good if you have one that will work more than one way. I have a little cheap one that's a hand crank, and it has a lantern. So I have a good lantern, a regular AM/FM radio, and it also picks up the NOAA channels. So it's a good thing to have something like that, because you have to be able to pick up the weather information, and not just weather, but anything else that's going on. So, and, you know, it's not a bad idea if you buy one, a radio with that capability. Take it to wherever your shelter might be. If you're going to shelter in a basement, take it down there and see if you're going to have any reception. It's a good idea to know. And then you may need to talk to the people where you bought it and see if they can, or the people that made it, and find out what they suggest. If you can't get good reception, what you can do to make it better. excuse me, a whistle. Well, you know what I think of whistles. I don't think they help too much, but it's for signaling. And if you were in a storm and the roof, you know, is partially down and you're trapped in your basement and people are going through the wreckage, a whistle might help in a case like that, or if you're lost in the woods. Cell phone. It's a good thing to have your cell phone with you. Make sure it's charged. And if you can find a solar charger as well as a standard charger like you would normally plug in the wall, having both is a very good idea. Now, let me see. Stock up on medical supplies. Now, of course, most of this right now is just the routine things you need. Stocking up on medical supplies is never a bad thing. basic first aid kit and manual. You want a good first aid book. Prescription meds, you should talk to your doctor about the possibility of getting two weeks extra in case of something happening, so you don't get caught without something in reserve. flashlights and extra batteries, and having a hand-cranked flashlight is a good thing. If you have power, having the USB rechargeable type flashlight is nice, but if you have but a hand crank flashlight, you have batteries and you can hand crank it, is probably a good idea, because your batteries wear down quickly, and you might not have the light, you might not have electricity to plug it in. Now, dust masks and gloves, plastic sheeting and duct tape. Now, I imagine Amazon, Walmart, any of the home improvement stores would have the plastic sheeting, and certainly all of them have duct tape. Uline is another company that sells plastic sheeting, and you might check there. Garbage bags, plastic ties, and wet wipes. And they were putting that down as personal hygiene. What I say, go another step further. If you are in a basement, you don't have a bathroom down there, 5-gallon painter's bucket, some good heavy-duty garbage bags, a big thing, a kitty litter with a scoop of some kind, and you want a snap-on toilet lid. They're called Luggable Loo. And I don't know what they're called at Amazon, but they used to carry them, so I think they still do. But they're not that much money. And it's a very good thing to have, because a 5-gallon bucket is about the same height, too, as a commode. So you put that on there, and you have a lid on it and everything. So it's nice. And that would help if you're in a basement, so you don't have to keep exposing yourself to radiation by going upstairs where you have the windows and maybe the dust is coming in under your front door and this kind of thing. Now, wrench, pliers, screwdrivers, a good utility knife, gloves. When I said gloves before, I was thinking in terms of like vinyl procedure gloves. But in this case, it would be gloves like work gloves. Keep an eye on the news, always. Try to watch the news, because you need to know what's going on in the world, what kind of negotiations are going on, and whether there's anybody that is that has decided, that the negotiations are breaking down, and they need we need to be on the defensive. We need to be watching. Now, DEFCON warning system, defense condition is what that means. So DEFCON warning system, the website still exists. They have done some things to it that make it difficult. It looks like for any information you have to download a PDF file, which I don't care for. But they do have a fairly extensive amount of supplies, disaster supplies on there. Some decent ones that they have on there now. So you might want to check that out. Now, let me see. Assess risk and consider evacuation if a nuclear exchange is likely to happen, if you can move to a better area that's less likely to get hit. Because airfields, naval bases, army bases, any military thing is probably going to get hit. And certainly Washington, and New York possibly, since there's a lot of people and it's a financial type of hub, they're more likely to get hit as well. So it's a good idea if you know something is coming, you have a strong indication, then also seek out a shelter. If you can find an emergency shelter, a bomb shelter in your area, try to find out where it is and try to make sure you know where it is so you can get there in a hurry. If you know people in area government buildings and schools and anywhere that has a basement without a lot of windows, it is a good idea to try to talk to them, and try to talk once again to the people in your town about the importance of having a shelter or a couple of shelters set up. It's really hard to get anyone to listen. Everybody wants to put their head in the sand, you know, and say, oh, what are the chances of that happening? You know, well, we thought that was the same thing about somebody from outer space invading us, and yet we've got people still all over the place here. And, you know, so what were the odds of that happening? No one thought that could ever happen. We just, oh, of course, you know, that was just a bunch of vandals last summer. Well, it wasn't, and they're still here, and we should be listening to it. So don't hide your head in the sand. Try to get your local governments interested in opening up a shelter. There should be more than one, and, you know, maybe they can stock it with water at least, you know, and then you have to bring your own provisions or something like that. But they should be doing it, and they should be getting the word out to people in case something happens. Because if you don't have a basement, you know, then what are you going to do? Are you going to have a place that is, you know, you wouldn't have an inner room in your house that is airtight, you know, that, well, not airtight, but close enough with no windows that you're safe. I'm close enough probably to Washington, D.C., that I would probably be in trouble regardless. But if you have a basement, then you can start putting supplies in the basement, setting up a corner of it, and then trying to set up some kind of partitions so that you can get behind those partitions and be safe. And you're looking at perhaps 5 to 10 days anyway. They say 48 hours on this website, but I don't think so. I think it's going to be more like 10 days to be safe. Now, let's see. So assess risk and consider evacuation if a nuclear exchange is likely. Airfields, naval bases, especially those known to house nuclear bombers, ballistic missile submarines, or ICBM silos, are likely to be targets. Commercial ports and runways over 10,000 feet are likely to be targets. Government centers, capital cities, and Washington, D.C., of course, and New York, large industrial cities, perhaps Chicago would be one. Major population cities such as New York, L.A., D.C., and Chicago. Learn about different types of nuclear weapons. It isn't necessarily that we need to know that, but fission bombs. This was the only type used in war so far. That was the fission bombs were used in Nagasaki and Hiroshima. Now, fusion bombs, thermonuclear weapons, they are usually many hundreds of times more powerful than bombs that destroyed Hiroshima and Nagasaki. And that is probably what we would use today. The bulk of the U.S. and Russian arsenal are said to have these types of fusion bombs, or thermonuclear weapons. Now, to survive an imminent attack, first you seek shelter immediately. The first warning may be a civil defense alarm, TV, radio, cell phone. Remember the alerts that come over your cell phone. It's a good idea. And they should be doing periodic tests. I don't think they're doing it anymore. Back in former President Trump's day, they were actually doing that. They started giving a message over there periodically, just like you get the message on the radio and TV, you know. And I don't think they're doing it now on the cell phones. But it is a good thing to be listening out for such things. Now, the bright light from a bomb that goes off, from the detonation, can be seen tens of miles away. I'm in North Carolina, and I am told that I would most likely be able to see the flash as well as feel and hear the explosion even in Washington. Now, that's into Maryland, almost into Maryland. So that's quite a distance. And it gives you an idea of how powerful it is. Now, I am told that, the light, you must never look directly at the light because it can blind you either temporarily or possibly even permanently. And if you're that close, you might also it burned. So if you are a few miles out, you will have 10 to 15 seconds until the heat wave hits you and 20 to 30 seconds until the shock wave does. If you can't find shelter, seek a depressed area nearby and lay face down, exposing as little skin as possible. If there is no shelter, dig as fast as possible. I'm laughing because I can see me doing that now. I'd be spending that time to run like heck to the nearest building. Even around 5 miles, you will suffer a third-degree burn. At 20 miles, the heat can burn the skin off of your body, too. And the wind may peak at around 600 miles per hour and will level anything or anyone caught in the open. So when you consider, you know, if you've ever seen the old pictures that they, when they were testing out in the desert, and they had some kind of house set up there, you know, and they showed the wind knocking down everything. That is probably far stronger now than it's probably much stronger now than it was then. It is best to get indoors, you know, ASAP, as it will provide some protection against the radiation, depending on how close you are to ground zero. So that, to me, I would not be out there trying to dig like a dog in the dirt to try to bury myself, because you can't really do that. I mean, who's going to be walking along with a shovel? You know, you wouldn't be able to really cover yourself. But if you were out and there was nowhere to go, you know, then laying that face down, and if you have a coat or something, put over your head, I guess. But one way or the other, you're going to probably get very, very sick. Stay away from windows when you're indoors. Try to get to a room without windows. Many windows may be blown out by the blast. If residing in Switzerland or Finland, check and see if your home has an atomic shelter. Find out if your village or your town has an atomic shelter or a fallout shelter and how to get there. The blast shelters have much stronger doors. I think they're thicker and have more stronger doors, whereas a fallout shelter may not be as sturdy. That is my understanding. And depending on how far away you are from what you might think are targets, you know, you probably, most of us would probably wish we had a blast shelter. But every, and I am saying this, I'm calling out to everybody that is a town manager. Everybody that is a town manager, I know that the pandemic ran everyone ragged. And I know that there isn't a lot of money and this kind of thing to put toward it. But we have never been much closer than this. At this time in our history, we are close to the possibility of a war. And what I am saying to you is that it's foolish not to take a look at it and try to find a way to set up shelters in different parts of each town. You need more than one, because not everybody has a basement. And particularly if you're close near a coast and there's, you know, a lot of water, so people can't really have a basement. You need to have shelters. You know, the basements of churches and schools and government buildings, you know, there are things like that around. There may be somebody that's willing to donate some space for the possibility of for their area, you know, for a possibility of a bomb. You know, we're talking at least 5 to 10 days, most likely. And, you know, if you supplied water, if you had water set up in there, and the people, you make sure the whole community knows you have to bring your food with you, whatever you're going to eat. You know, the provisions, but at least have water in there for them. Toilets notoriously break down in basements. And that bucket idea with the kitty litter and all of that, much better idea to have on hand just in case. Now, but it is a good thing if you take time to talk to town managers and try to get them interested in seeing that this could happen, and it would be a really wise thing to take care of it. Now, shelter, let's see. And I think, you know, I think also if Switzerland and Finland and places like that have atomic shelters built into homes, why don't we? Why can't they take part of a basement, you know, and set it up so that it automatically can be used that way, you know, with a, maybe just a little bit of alteration. Make sure that the deaf and sick or elderly hear the alarm, if there's a big town alarm, and then to shelter if possible. Help them to get to a shelter. Try to avoid any types of clothing or surroundings that are combustible. If you're anywhere near where you'll feel that heat, you don't want to wear anything combustible. Nylon and oil-based materials may ignite or melt in the extreme heat. And there were pictures, I don't know if anybody remembers when I had them on the show, but there were pictures from Hiroshima and Nagasaki where people, their fabric just melted into their backs, into their skin. You could see the whole pattern of the fabric on their backs. You know, it just burned right on, you know, right into them. Remember that radiation exposure could cause large numbers of deaths, and most certainly it would if that happens. And I will tell you this, and I know everybody that wants to deny that there's anything going on right now as far as an invasion will laugh and say, well, she's finally lost her mind. But this is what they want. They would like very much for us to have a world war. Why? They want to be able to just take our souls. Do they do that? Yes, they do. If any of you have seen them walking down the street or in the woods and they have a big metal box, that's what that big metal box is for. It is called a containment unit, and they can pull your soul, your energy into it. And they can do it right out of your body, or they can do it when you're already out of your body, which would be easier for them. And they wouldn't have to come down here in the radiation. They can actually do that from their spaceships. So that's what would happen. If we kill ourselves off, they will be happy to come by and collect us, and they will make money on our suffering. So we don't need mass casualty events. We've already had one this summer, and people have been trying really hard to ignore that it happened. We need really to try to understand that this is a time when we're not particularly safe, and we need to take action and get something done about it. Now, we're talking about the blast. Initial radiation is released at the moment of detonation. It is short-lived and travels short distances. Once you survive the blast and the initial radiation, you must find protection against the fallout. Now, the fallout is radioactive dust and dirt. When the blast happens, it creates like a suction. All of that dirt goes up in the air with the mushroom cloud, and then it rains back down. And it can be very fine particles that can go a very long way depending on the weather and the wind and all of that. You know, if it rains where the bomb landed, it would probably keep a lot of that down to the ground in that area. But if it's dry and windy, it would go everywhere. Now, so you don't want fallout on you. You want to try to stay as far away from that as you can. That's one reason why you need to shelter for say, 5 to 10 days is because of that. And another thing you might add to your kit, you know, you want to have either really good, like maybe boots that you can take off when you get back in your house once you do start leaving your shelter, because you don't want to pick up all that dust and move it all over your house. So you want something you can take off at the door, some kind of shoe covers and that kind of thing, so that you're not picking it up and carrying it around with you. You have to have a closed up, you know, long sleeve type shirt, gloves, mask, eye protection, as well as respirator. And you might even want to make sure you have something over your hair. You can get those Tyvek suits. Uline has them, and I'm sure plenty of other places do as well. And you could take that off and then perhaps reuse it. If you're careful the way you take it on and off, you could reuse things like that. Or just make sure you have a respirator and with a face mask on it, preferably, so it doesn't get in your eyes either. Now, radiation particles, alpha particles, they travel, a couple of inches. They're short-lived. Beta particles travel in about 10 meters. Gamma rays travel approximately a mile. And gamma rays are more invasive and dangerous. Alpha consists of two proteins and two neutrons, helium nucleus. And alpha particles are stopped by the outer layer of your skin or a few centimeters of air. They're short-lived. They present a minimal threat outside your body. However, they can cause serious damage if you eat them or if you inhale them. That's why you need face protection. Beta particles. These consist of a high-speed electron ejected from the nucleus of a decaying atom. They are more penetrating than alpha particles and can cause beta burns. They make it sound in that article like beta burns are very mild, but they can be very severe. They can be similar to a sunburn or consist of a bright red area of tightly packed vesicles, you know, little itty-bitty fluid-filled blisters. They can be very painful. And gamma rays are the most penetrating of the three. They will penetrate any kind of clothing and require large masses of material for shielding. They will cause large amounts of damage in the body. So they're among the most dangerous. Now, and protective clothing isn't going to do but so much for that. Let's see. A shelter's protective factor, or PF, against radiation will tell you how many times less a person inside of the shelter will receive radiation compared to an open space. So a PF 300 means that you will receive 300 times less radiation in the shelter than in the open. Try not to spend more than 5 minutes exposed to anything that has gamma rays. Begin reinforcing your shelter from the inside by stacking, this article said by stacking dirt around the walls or anything else you can find. Well, I would say that what you should do is to plan to have a lot of sandbags and keep them up against your walls and have sandbags ready in the event you have to use that space. You put them in the window well and then put plywood over it and screw it into the masonry. So you have that big, thick barrier right up against that window that should help a whole lot. Now, so that's what I would recommend you do for that. So you do want to reinforce it, though. It's true, you can reinforce it with furniture and everything else, but if you're doing it to try to stop radiation, the sandbags are a better idea. Now, canvas from a parachute or a tent will help stop fallout from piling up on you, but it won't stop gamma rays. It is impossible to completely shield from all radiation. It can only be kept at a tolerable level. And if you have a dosimeter, you will find that when you have that going, that, you know, there's always going to be background radiation. And most of it is pretty small. And that's the kind that you expect to have, and it's relatively harmless. I just had my computer do something that's really annoying. That is really annoying. Excuse me for 1 minute. I've got to sign back into the show. I don't know why this thing does this, but it did it to me last time, too. Suddenly, I just lose the screen. Okay. Now we're back. Okay. Sorry about that. Okay, plan on staying in, oh, wait a minute, the amount of needed material to reduce radiation. I tried to put the picture of this, it was like a picture with this scale on it. I don't think it came over the show page. I tried twice. I don't know why it would not take it. It looked like it did, but then it didn't take it, so I'm not sure it's on there. But the amount of material needed to reduce radiation to 1/1000, steel, 21 centimeters or approximately 7/10 of a foot. Rock, 70 to 100 centimeters or 2 to 3 feet of rock. Concrete, 66 centimeters or 2.2 feet of concrete. Wood, 2.6 centimeters or 8.8 feet. Soil, 1 meter or 3.3 feet. And ice, 2 meters, 6.6 feet. Or snow, you have to have 20 to 22 feet of it, 6 meters or 20 to 22 feet of snow. Now, plan on staying in your shelter for a minimum of 48 hours. I would say anywhere from 2 to 10 days, but it was probably more like 5 to 10. Now, the reason for this is to avoid the radiation, of course. The other major products of fission are cesium and strontium. These have half-lives of 30 years and 28 years, respectively. They are very well absorbed by living things and can make food products dangerous for decades. They can be carried by the wind for thousands of miles. Therefore, remote areas are not very safe either. In other words, if you're in the country, that doesn't mean that you're completely free of it. Ration your supplies. Processed foods are okay to eat as long as the cans are not punctured. Boxes and bags, though, I would recommend highly that you don't use them. Now, I mean, even though they might be okay if they're inside your house and they're in a cabinet and they're, you know, they're all wrapped up and they might be safe then. But if you're going out in supermarkets when the thing is over, I'd be a little afraid of it. Animals may be eaten, but you know, like if you go hunting, but must be skinned carefully with the heart, liver, and kidneys discarded, and don't eat the meat close to the bone, as the bone marrow retains radiation. If you get irradiated, radiation tends to gravitate right to the marrow of your bone. So that's why they're saying that. Plants in a hot zone are edible, and that's something I haven't figured out why they said that. Those with edible root system like carrots and potatoes are highly recommended. I'm not sure I'd want the green plants above the soil if they're in a hot zone. But you can, because I think they would have radioactive dust and everything on there. I don't think I'd want that. The roots should be okay and are highly recommended. Open water may receive, you know, like streams and rivers may receive fallout particles, and that's harmful, so you shouldn't drink it. Water from underground is safe, you know, like springs. Wells also. And wells, if they are covered, would be safe. If they're wide open, probably not, because fallout can go down into the water. They recommend creating a filter if you have to take it from outdoors, creating a filter by digging a hole about a foot away from the bank of stream and drawing the water which seeps into the hole. You know, dig it deep enough that the water comes into the hole. And then you still, of course, have to filter it, and you have to boil it and treat it with water purification tablets and all of that. But it would create a filter that would help to get rid of any fallout. But, of course, ideally you'll have it in bottles or, you know, in safe bottles, like the big gallon jugs of drinking water in the stores or something. Emergency drinking water can be gotten from your water heater, too. And I will try my best to find that procedure and tell you how to do it tomorrow. Wear all clothing. Let's see, we got six more minutes. Wear all clothing, gloves, goggles, closed-sleeve shirts, etc., when outside. To help prevent beta burns, decontaminate, it says, by shaking your clothes often. Well, that doesn't work, because if you have radioactive dust all over your suit, if you, especially if you're wearing a suit, but, well, anything you're wearing, you want to take it off carefully, not fast. And you don't shake it up in the air, because why? You're going to get it in your eyes and your nose and your mouth. And it might land on your skin, and you may not even realize it. So you would unzip your shirt or unbutton it, and then you would very carefully pull it back. And when you take it off, turn it wrong side outwards so that the stuff that you're avoiding is on the inside rather than flying all over the room. And Let's see. And then you want to decontaminate yourself. You know, if you've been out, you want to wash your arms, your hands, face, especially if any of it has been exposed to the air without a mask, to make sure you don't have anything on you. Now, to help prevent beta burns, decontaminate by shaking. Oh, I'm sorry. That's another one. Another the same thing. But don't shake it. If you do, do it very gently outside, not inside. And make sure you have face protection so you're not inhaling it. And you should be wearing mask and gloves, too. You don't want to breathe the radioactive dust, remember, because even alpha particles and beta particles can hurt you very badly if you're inhaling them. Now, treating radiation and thermal burns. Minor burns, also known as beta burns, well, those cannot, they can be very serious, not just minor, can also be caused by other particles. Flush area with cool water for about 5 minutes until the pain lessens. Beta burns have been known to be serious and internal as well as external. You can actually have blistering on organs from beta radiation. Now, let's see. So it can happen that way. So it can be very serious. And it can be ongoing. It can actually, if someone is exposed and you might likely have that kind of exposure during a war situation, you can have those come and go. You might have, say, a beta burn on your arm that heals and then comes back. And then heals and then comes back. It can happen that way. Now, if skin starts to blister, char, or break, wash with cold water to remove contaminants and then cover with a sterile compress to prevent infection. Do not break the blisters. And if you're covering it with a sterile compress, if the blisters are there and they're not broken, a dry dressing may be okay. But do not, if the skin does not blister, char, or break, don't cover it even if it is over a large area like a sunburn. Wash the area and cover with Vaseline or a solution of baking powder and water, which I've not heard of before. Severe burns or thermal burns come from the high-intensity heat rather than ionizing particles. This can be life-threatening. Factors include water loss, shock, lung damage, infection, and probably other factors as well. Protect burns from further contamination. If you have an open, like a third-degree burn, it's a good idea if you have those burn gel dressings because those will prevent sticking, you know, so that the sore area doesn't stick to the dressing. Protect burns from further contamination. If clothing covers the burn area, gently cut and remove the cloth from the burn. Do not try to remove cloth which has stuck or fused to the burn. Do not try to pull clothes over the burn. You just have to be very careful with it. If it has melted and fused to the burn, then I would imagine you trim it back as much as you can, and if you're going to wash the area with water, you know, or normal saline or something like that, and the soaking may get that off if you can do it long enough. Do not try to pull clothes over it, as I said. Gently wash with water only. Do not apply creams or ointments. And they gave this idea of putting saran wrap over it, and that, I think, is absolutely insane. I would have to have a doctor tell me that that's right, because I don't think it is. I've read that other places as well. We just got our 60-second notice here, so I'll finish this up tomorrow. But preventing shock. Shock is the inadequate flow of blood to the vital tissues and organs. If untreated, it can be fatal. Shock results from excessive blood loss, deep burns, or even reactions to the sight of a wound or blood. Because remember, after something like that's going on, you're in a highly excitable state. I'm going to make a little mark here so I know where I stopped. And I will finish this up tomorrow, and we're going to talk some about electrical pulse, electromagnetic pulse attacks and this kind of thing on tomorrow. And I want to thank all of you that are listening today. You know, feel free to email me or call in and let me know what you think of the show now that we're back on. But one way or the other, listen to the news. Get your supplies together, please. And meet me back here at 4 p.m. Sunday when we learn together to how to survive the days ahead. Until then, may God bless. Good night.